I'm going to put the signs up.
Which one of you is going next? Our next speaker will be Nancy Chin, whom you've already met through her great banners that are hanging in the ballroom and the painting that she's doing on the stage. Yes, and the work that we are doing at our own tables that she has instructed us to do. Before I introduce Nancy with her story, we need to have the use of a small...
I've got it. She's got it.
All right. Okay. Never mind. I bet you wonder what that was. A small pin. Nancy told me that she would like to thank her children for encouraging her to begin painting. When her children were 1, 2, and 4 years old, they lived on an Indian reservation in Oregon. She would take her children into the living room and show them a timer. She set the timer for 1 hour, and she would say to her children, "Now you will see me, but you cannot talk to me during this hour." And she would set up her work and put on headphones with lots of loud music and paint furiously for 1 hour. She said she knew this was good for her children because when she got done, she was a nicer person. Then when the paintings were finished, she put them up on the mantle, and the children were the first critics. The one that was in a playpen at that time is now an artist, and all three of them are creative, artistic people. So that was a good model and a good lesson and a good help to Nancy.
I've never used one of these. That's quite like this. It's a remote, and I'm used to being all wired up with all these things I have to push. I need to know who you are. How many of you are artists? Oh, yes. How many of you are musicians? Great. Dancers. Pastors. Lay people. Other artists. Now, why isn't everybody's hand up? How many of you are artists? Yes! I'm a working class woman. You're going to hear this from quite a different perspective. I've also written out my script because I want to be very clear with you about what I'm going to be talking about. I want to try to address three areas of interest today. They are the symbol system. I want to challenge our imagination about what that might be. I want us to think about new ways of being an artist, new ways for the church to imagine art, I see that as one section, and new images of old religious ideas, new holy carts, as it were. There are two women I especially want to thank today. One is not here, the Reverend Gail Morris, and one is here, Dr. Estella Lauder, who have helped me form these ideas, and all the other countless women, many of you are in this room, who've helped me and nurtured me along this very interesting path. Because my style of work just doesn't happen in isolation. I'm not one of those artists who goes up into the garret, you know, and comes out with something. I need your energy, and I need to be able to give it back to you. So I cultivate all the skills I can find of dialogue. I hate talking like this. I wish we could talk together. And relationship. Because that's what moves me toward where I need to go. There are others who are not as extroverted as I, who work differently, but that's the way I work. Now I'd like to talk about symbols. Throughout our tradition, there's been a long history of Christian symbols that have been used to convey our doctrine. Sometimes we do this in narrative art, and sometimes, like the group of 10 that you may have found up in Lounge A, those are narrative art that I did about stories of women and abuse shared with our biblical sisters and us today. Thank you. I hope that you go see it. It's
scary work. But sometimes this is done through a complex system of signs that symbolize and contain a coded message. Now write in the Alpha and Omega, or if you haven't got a pen out, have somebody near you write it and look at it. Omegas look like a horseshoe. The system works this way. If you memorize the code, you can shortcut the memory to an idea. You see, we work toward our head with this system. It's like a computer. You know, if you've got a computer and you push a certain button and you get this certain thing to happen, the symbol system works like that. For instance, now look at it. What do you remember about that? Do you remember where it came from? Do you remember when you learned it? Do you remember what its connection is with anything of your own personal life? Do you remember where it is in the Bible and why it's there? You probably have some connection with that symbol. But I have a problem with that. It relies on your intellect. And as an artist, I want to rely on your heart. I want to begin here, not here. I also have a problem with it because it comes out of a Western European base, from an era that is not my own, and I want more. I want more from my art. You might even read Elite there. You've got to know the system to be able to understand the image. I want something that anyone can understand. And so we'll look at modern art. The church hasn't really looked very hard at modern art. The church is uncomfortable with it. And I'll be addressing a little bit later in this talk why that is. Why we have not yet been able to seriously embrace that. But it's because the modern art really relies on metaphor, and it requires many different points of view to interpret it. Now let's see if all this system works. We're going to go down lights and up lights. Here I find the most powerful use of art if it's going to come on. This is a Pentecost piece from Grace Cathedral. I'm going to walk you through it. Here the art is used to evoke, to help the soul dance between mood and idea, between theology and spirit. This piece is 200 feet long, 60-something feet high, 60-something feet wide, I can't remember anymore. Painted nylon net. Everything I do is temporary because I want to give space for new creativity, new images, new ways of understanding who God is right now. This is from the celibate's point of view. Here, art, it also can work like a stage design, like a mask for the architecture. This is a tree of life that was put up the day before the Gulf War at Grace Cathedral. I'll walk you through it. It's paper lace. This is the top of it. The sun, the moon and stars, the weather, the roots. And with my Jewish friends, I had many conversations about what was on that tree of knowledge. And my friend Joe got half of the tree and I got half the tree. Half of its apples and half of its figs. So that's a fig apple tree. And of course it comes out of water. All out of the water of chaos. And it dwelled in its beauty above the baptismal font and greeted people as they came in. And because of its size, it billowed in the space and contained breath. Lights. How does liturgical art differ then than regular art? I think it has to do with context. I have abandoned the symbol system of the church that I spoke of earlier, and it's the formal elements of modern art that are my focus and the potential for me for using the metaphors that I do in church. In the following slides, I'm going to illustrate from my own work what I mean visually. However, I can't really tell you what that is. You have to be there. Because it's not just about the visual information, it's about the whole service that goes on at the same time. So, sorry that was a little bit brief, Wynn, but let's go back down. I'm going to give you just one illustration of each idea. Light and dark. And these come straight out of nature. This is an old piece. Some of you may have seen this. This is from a Presbyterian church that does not know anything about, or did not know anything about, Easter Vigil. So this had been a piece that they'd had for Lent. It covered up a stained glass window, but hinted that there was something beyond it. The sculpture's focus? Let's see. Focus. If there's somebody near the projector who could focus, that'd be great. Can't. Well, not quite. If there's somebody who knows how to work a projector, would you please work the focus on it? I suspect it's an autofocus and it's going to keep going doing that. So anyway, they had this for Lent that covered up the front huge architectural cross that was there. When they came in on Easter, it looked like this. It was very dark. The lights weren't on. The music was not playing. The candles weren't lit. There were these weird shapes there, and the curtain was there, but not the crown of thorns. The service began with someone singing quietly from the balcony, "Were You There?" the old spiritual. And then the reading for the day was read, which was, "Why are you seeking the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen." And the choir sang those words with trumpet. And at the same time, the curtain dropped. Justice was in place. And then the organ began, the introduction to "Christ the Lord is risen today," and all these things happened at once that I'm going to just go with right now. Somebody really does need to focus these. Stand there and work the focus knob. All the pulpit cloths were changed from Lent to Easter. The vestments that people had were changed. All that color came up from behind those shapes. It looked like this, and at the same time people came in carrying baskets of colored flowers, lit all the candles. It took the 45 seconds of the introduction of the hymn, and the people rose and sang, "Christ the Lord is risen today." That's the use of light and dark. As the people turned to leave, this was in place. The next thing I'd like to talk about is transparency and opacity. These are tools I use. They're not really symbols. They're formal art elements. This is just the light coming through the window transparently across a pew. Transparency and opacity. And this actually is the first piece I ever did. We had in our church adopted two Ethiopian refugees. This is Ethiopian imagery. What I didn't have a clue about when I began this was that they were sheer and that they would move when the people moved. And as they moved, they'd appear and disappear in the light. Weird. I made up little stories about these angels. You know, this is you in the center, and all those blessings that surround you are so many you can't even count them. I hate to tell you this, but they have been lost. Scale. You know, we simply don't make it big enough. How can you talk about God in 3 feet by 5 feet in a church that's got a 40-foot ceiling? It's just got to be big. So this is an Advent piece from the C cycle of the lectionary. By the way, I always start with the Bible. I discern with people, what is it you're trying to get across? And I'll elaborate on that later in this talk. This is the angel of fire. It comes from Jesus preaching about the end of the world, how awful it's going to be. The angel of water, you getting it? Fire, water. This is from John's baptizing. Notice the transparency, notice the color, it's all there, but we're talking about scale. Earth swinging between the moon and the stars and the sun and air. When Elizabeth and Mary met and the children were born, what's the first thing we do? We don't see first, we breathe. Until the host came and surrounded the people. Repetition, pattern. You know that old rosary? There was something there. Repeating it again and again and again. This image, which I do need focused, I'll take you through it. It should focus more than that, but I've never seen it that out of focus. Thank you. These are origami cranes. There are about 25,000 of 50,000 that the Diocese of San Francisco folded in 1980. When did we have the earthquake? 1989? For the then 50,000 deaths of AIDS in people here in America, and every one of them had somebody's name on it. Oh, that was backwards. Focus. I don't know why this does this, but thank you. They were hung in a series of five curtains to create the image, with about 100 people working. You can see the curtains now, hung from the catwalk. And here's a close-up of what they look like. It's a repetition. Color. This is a real simple one. This is from Pentecost. And it's the Comforter coming. And it's simply ribbon. Blessing the space. Texture. And also in this one, oh, it's upside down. I'm sorry. Turn your head. This also will be about movement, which is the last one that I do. Some of you may have been at Ames at the Coliseum with a theme, Whose World Is It? It was all done with paper lace. We used the same image again and again. And this, as we talk about integrity of creation and the fact that we have covered it up with concrete and other abusive activities, the white paper lace was replaced by abused paper lace. And then there were themes of native stories of creation, and we had images like this, and then we tore it all up and we hung it as shreds when we talked about justice. Then the people began hearing stories that evening of hope, and we began filling the shards of broken paper with angels. Some of you may recognize that angel. And then the white creation pieces came back and joined the angels. The last evening was a cross. I personally have a great deal of trouble with the cross. I do not find it a salvific image at all. So I reclaimed it this way. Around the center were human faces. The top were images from the North Pole, the equator in the center, the South Pole at the bottom, and I could ask who or what is on that cross. And what does that mean? Does that mean that the earth has to be sacrificed for redemption to happen? Or does it mean redemption doesn't happen out there somewhere, but right here on earth? Okay, now I'd like to discuss, if we can have the lights on for just a minute. I've tried to give you a context to understand where I come from, and now I would like to talk and perhaps even to challenge some basic assumptions about what art and church might even be about. Now I'd like to discuss a wonderful project to give you a paradigm of how it can work. And in doing so, further try to explain some of these ideas while discussing new ways of being an artist and new ways to look theologically at art. The commission came from Gail Morris. She called up one day and said, I really want you to work with a church, but I haven't got the foggiest idea what I want you to do. Can you tell me what your interests might be? Says I, quick to spot a soapbox. Well, yes, I'm very interested in relationships. I would like to explore some of those ideas theologically and artistically. And back and forth our ideas went. And we decided that we would begin with an in-house retreat using art materials as a place to explore relationships as content and process. For the next 10 weeks, the cathedral here in Minneapolis explored the whole question of relationship with liturgy, education, and programmed events. During the second week, the people were invited and given a very sheer piece of fabric about 9 inches wide, about 6 feet long, and were asked to pick a particular relationship during the period of time in the church that they were working on relationships, pick a particular relationship and pray about it. And then just like we have scribbles, you know, on our tables that are almost like artifacts of what we've been thinking about, they were asked to use that scrap of fabric as an artifact of that prayer. So people brought them back the 9th week of this project, filled with paint and stitches and lunch and one person ran it through their computer and another person used Xerox images on it. I mean, everybody brought back their own prayer strip. Then we rolled them, I came back and we rolled them together as a canopy over the people, through the cathedral that went from the back to the front. Then the miracle happened. Under this beautiful, wispy canopy of the prayers of the people, the following liturgy was held. You know, in the Episcopal tradition, lights. In the Episcopal tradition, they have a wonderful program of lessons and carols. So the staff put together a liturgy of lessons and carols about relationships. It happened on Mother's Day, 1993. The reader that I would like to share with you was a woman of about 80, whose white hair barely reached above the podium, and who walked with two canes, and who read the following. This is as you come into the cathedral. There are seven slides of this, and I'll just flip through them. My children are coming today. They mean well, but they worry. They think I should have a railing in the hall, a telephone in the kitchen. They want someone to come in when I take a bath. They really don't like my living alone. Help me to be grateful for their concern and help them to understand that I have to do what I have to do as long as I can. They're right when they say there are risks. I might fall. I might leave the stove on. But there is no challenge, no possibility of triumph, no real aliveness without risk. Could you monitor that for me and just keep... Thank you. When they were young and climbed trees and rode bicycles and went away to camp, I was terrified. But I let them go because to hold them would have been to hurt them. Now our roles are reversed. Help them see. Keep me from being grim and stubborn about it. But don't let them smother me. I have been young and now I am old. I found that to be the gospel. Now I'd like the lights again. I'd like to quote to you from two letters that would best say what needs to be said here about the role of the artist in the church. I cannot get over what a gift you gave to this place. It was so wonderful to have us all so focused and so in tune with each other. The Holy Spirit does indeed run through you and work through you, and I'm so grateful to have been in the fallout. Since the festival, I've had some time to think and reflect on those parts which were most meaningful to me and how grateful I am for your being here and your participation, your gifts of creativity. The whole festival was marked by relationships beyond any that I could have imagined was possible to demonstrate. I believe that the life of the cathedral parish has been altered by your efforts and participation in Festival Week. So not enough for me to be a good designer. I think the role of the artist in the church might have a further dimension. I'm going to skip this part because we're running short of time. I want you to see the last images. Ask me questions about it later. We can be subversive. But I want to just briefly say, and I'll clue you in, that I think that the role of the art for the church is to teach people how to be in relationship by teaching them how to see and how to listen and keep quiet. And enter a relationship with the work itself. I think you can practice that with this work. And I have my slides clued up about the work up here, but I'm going to skip this part. I'll come back to it if appropriate. I would like you to practice listening now with the other carousel, and so would you please trade it? About 5 years ago, I heard a lecture by Dr. Estella Lauder, and I woke up about 2 weeks before this talk preparing for it, and remembered that slide lecture. I called her And in the way that Sophia works, I got her on the only hour she was in her office. It gets better. She came to another conference here in Minneapolis at the Hyatt at the same time that we were here and gave me the slides. So thank you very, very much. About 5 years ago when I saw the work, I realized in looking at it that contemporary artists are dealing with much of the same issue that we are here in the church. And contemporary theologians and contemporary artists are not talking to each other. And I thought today might be the good day to start building that bridge. I'd like to propose that these women that I'm going to discuss and the artists like them might lead us toward a new kind of holy image, one that might stand beside, or dare I hope replace, some of our more traditional images. Try it out for yourself as we see these slides and hear the words that Estella brought to us that day, which I will paraphrase and bring to you today. This is from Maria Akeeler. Will you correct me, Estella? Akeeler, thank you. It is from a series of reliefs called Love to Death. It's painted on aluminum like an outsider artist might paint. Notice that the sculptural elements can't stay contained in that space. They have to flee out. Here we have an image of paradise that does not look very safe. The self-portrait is that white deer in the center. That's her in the center. And she's being overcome by a stronger animal in a ritual that is sanctioned by that candelabra in the lower part. At the apex of the pyramid of light, her winged spirit flies away. The title of this piece is Loved to Death, The Embrace. Like Lilith, as she flies out of the apex, she would rather flee paradise than be pinned down. Maria's words, paradise was never an idyllic place, particularly for women. Her series might stand for the condition of many women in cultures where love is synonymous with possession. The result is death, regardless of the motive. In This Message Will Not Be Repeated by Ellen Kiefer or Kiefer, we have an interesting revisiting of this ancient goddess who governs so much of our image of who we are as women. But what has Kiefer done? Here, the woman and the pedestal that she's on are bound up. The title is This Message Will Not Be Repeated. It is an image of active protest. And together with her title, it asserts refusal to continue to worship the image of woman given to us in our culture as a starting place for us to redefine who we are as women. We can bind up the old images or we can simply let go of them. In Sisyphus Unbound, Ethel Schwabacher gives us a vision of what it might be to move on. Remember the story, how he pushed the rock up the hill? Well, in this image, he doesn't push it up anymore. He simply lets go and bounds down the hill. Where is he bounding to? What is this new life? What would it mean to let go of our rock of patriarchy and simply construct a new way to be? In Past Meet Present, we have one of two ways of dealing with this. As a woman who is in a minority in our church, I really identify with this piece. My experience as a lesbian is I cannot belong. And this piece says that so clearly to me. We have to find new ways to build bridges, because this is the reality many of us live in now. In Caught Between Night Suns, we see reconciliation in a different way. Here she has portrayed herself both as self and artist. Both are naked, both vulnerable, both are very clear. Notice where her brush is placed on the life line of the hand. Notice that she sits in a sign of womanhood, a pool of menstrual blood, and both in solidarity look toward the viewer. In this work, I find her asking if reconciliation is an internal process rather than one that we can incorporate the values of the world outside. In this image, which is called Prima Para, and I'm sorry I have to go fast, I just got my nudge. This is an image of birth, where the artist felt her power both as pregnant one and erotic one, and was claiming her animal and human nature. This is the top piece, a detail of it. In Medusa Face, one knows another in our tradition by a name. The artist is suggesting we can, through our imagination, find the Medusa. Now, Medusa is a very interesting character. We don't have time to go into much of that. She's been demonized by our culture, by our faith, but in fact it's about women's power. And those of us who've moved through therapeutic relationships, either professional or spiritual, from victim to power, have faced this Medusa and have found in her an icon of freedom to make our own choices. In a way, we have found the power of life over death. Here's another image of Medusa. Here she is restored to the healing role as the creator of the universe in an altarpiece, Great Medusa, creation of the cosmos. Her headdress is made in the image of our reproductive system. Notice that her gaze is, notice the place of the planets as ovaries. Her hands are spread in benediction. Her gaze is that of an icon. The artist shared that the community tried to destroy this image when it was put up. We're still trying to get rid of Medusa. This is called Small Black Eve. Notice the snake rises between her legs as an undulating system of knowledge. She's got many hands and many arms to carry on her work. There's no apology here, only strength. In creation and recreation, Suzanne Okamoto has a black mother in birth posture, blowing human lives out of her mouth and taking them back through the top of her head in the space of the third eye. Another of her images is the vision of the creative forces embracing and nurturing feminine power in waters above and below the firmament. The snakes come back as a latent reminder of the knowledge of the emerging universe. And these are my favorite. I hope we get time for them. Judith Anderson, Missagaya, this is my body. The warp is made out of a living female body that was herself composed of infinite variety of creatures engaged in a vast exchange of lives. This is the body we take and eat. This mother is painfully aware of the loss. It is another kind of pietà. It contains, as the artist said, both creation and profound grief and anger. Another of her works, the mandala of the spinning goddess, is a very sexualized birthing image with a hooded clitoris, and what emerges is the thread of our lives. A crone midwives, but an ordinary woman weaves the fabric of the lives with her own hands. I have to stop. Can I do this last one? This is it. In Spinster, she understands, Helen Klebsiebel understands that the thread is spun by a pregnant woman quickly, and that quickly becomes the net that stretches out to encompass the planets. Notice that the phases of the moon herself, rather than controlling our lives, are now part of our responsibility. Thank you.
We're just going to take a minute here while we're setting up the musical machine. It's a musical piano, I think, for our next presentation. You could, at this time, if you have any questions, write them on the card. Would you please put the name of the person to whom you would like your question addressed, if it matters to you? Maybe it's a general question for all three of our artists. And then we'll pick them up. You might want to stand and stretch for just a minute. Is there someone present who can be a pianist for us? Yes, would you come forward?
Okay. Do we need to pass this music?
It's been passed off and off.